Good evening and welcome to WDIY and the program On Every Main Street. This program takes a deeper look into the greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce and all of its affiliates. This evening, we are happy to talk about how we look forward into the year 2021, and we're chatting with Al Jacobson, the Executive Director of Miller Symphony Hall and, of course, the home of Allentown Symphony Orchestra. Welcome, Al.
Thank you for inviting me on your show.
You bet. Hey, Al, the last time I visited with you, you took me to the Library of Music in the Miller Symphony Hall. It's an outstanding place. And Al, being a musician yourself, when you walk into that room, what do you feel?
Oh, it's actually a great place to be as a musician, especially one who appreciates the vast history of orchestral music. It's a little bit of an oasis. Our librarians keep things very organized, so it's a nice place to be, but it reminds me of why we are here at the Allentown Symphony and in Miller Symphony Hall. It's an amazing room. If you have access to it like I do, to kind of open up some of the cabinets and look at the music that is stored there, it's a reminder of what has happened here, the long history of incredible performances and upholding the art form of orchestral music. It's actually somewhere I sometimes go to take a little break and a breather from the day.
I bet. You know, sometimes when we listen to a symphony perform, we forget about all the sheet music that goes along with each performance, all the different types of instruments, and, you know, the first clarinet doesn't play what the third clarinet is playing. I mean, this is very complex, and it's an interesting place. I felt a fascinating sense of being around some great things.
Yes, a lot of people, unless you have familiarity with all of this, are not aware of the fact that orchestras and really any music ensembles, bands as well, have libraries of music. And there's one or two important reasons why they exist. Probably the most obvious is that a lot of music is only available for purchase. So once you purchase it, what are you going to do with it? You need to store it properly and so forth. But there's a lot of work that has to be done to maintain the music and make sure it's all correct and workable for the musicians. So there's many publishers, and there's the same pieces of music that have been published by different publishers, so there's differences sometimes, and those things have to be addressed. And simple things, like there might be a bad page turn for the second violin, so then the librarian has to photocopy to make sure they don't have an awkward page turn and can keep playing their music. There's mistakes in music, so if a set is purchased and a mistake is found, then that mistake can get corrected, sometimes even by just handwriting the correction, and now that is preserved, that correction, for the next time the piece is performed. And this is just a sliver of the things that librarians and an orchestra music library have to deal with. So there's a lot to that world that, of course, people don't know about or don't see just by going to a concert.
Well, just like Miller Symphony Hall, it's a fascinating part of Miller Symphony Hall. I want to talk to you about what's coming up, because the cool thing about being in a live performance venue is, at least right now, is thinking, wow, this is all going to come back soon. What's the Allentown Symphony Orchestra look like for the rest of 2021?
Yes, it's very exciting. So much has changed just in the last month plus that is giving us confidence of full return to performances with a full orchestra on stage and the ability to sell the full house. So we just recently in May, around mid-May, announced the 21-22 season of the Allentown Symphony Orchestra. So our concert season is similar to a school year. It starts in the fall and actually goes into the following summer. So we just announced both five separate POPS programs and five separate classical programs that start in this September and go actually all the way till next July, July 22. And it's a number of programs that were supposed to have been performed but got delayed because of the pandemic. So we're really thrilled to be bringing those back to audiences to present. For instance, looking at a couple things here, we're doing in March of 22 a great program that's going to feature our SHOT competition, which is our biennial string competition winner. He's doing the great Dvorak cello concerto. And then we're doing music of Ravel, including music to his ballet based on Mother Goose, the Mother Goose tale, and the ever-popular Bolero. And so that was something that was supposed to happen this past March is now happening this upcoming season. But in terms of the rest of 21, we have two Pops concerts. One is featuring the multi-talented Dave Bennett, who performed with us before. He plays clarinet, guitar, piano. He sings. So he's going to do a concert that features music from the swing era all the way through rock and roll. And that's on September 25th. We also have something which is new for us, which is a holiday Pops concert. This December, we did a virtual one this past December with a brass quintet, but now we're going to have one with an orchestra that's going to have music from the holidays, all kinds of familiar tunes that can best be brought to the community by an orchestra. We also have two classical concerts. We're going to open up with music of Mendelssohn and Brahms. And also, and this will be interesting, we're doing an overture by a romantic female composer. And I say romantic, she lived during the romantic era, the same time as, for instance, Mendelssohn. Louise Ferenc is her name. And her music is coming more into fashion and more attention is on it, rightfully so, as many orchestras around the country look to feature more music by female composers. So we're doing an overture by her. And then in November, there's nothing quite like Beethoven, and we're doing an all-Beethoven concert, which includes his fourth piano concerto with a great Italian virtuoso pianist, Stefano Greco, and the Seventh Symphony, which the slow movement is particularly famous. It was used in the King's Speech at the very end when he's giving the speech in the film. So we have a lot to look forward to with the orchestra, and we grow more and more confident each day that we'll be able to present this season as we've announced it.
And how do people buy tickets?
Our box office is now open with limited hours. So people can call our box office at 610-432-6715. Again, 610-432-6715. You can actually go to our box office. We do have limited hours during the week, Monday through Friday from 10 to 2, here, right here at Miller Symphony Hall. Or you can go online and visit millersymphonyhall.org. Now, right now, for these concerts, they are only available through subscription. So we will start selling single tickets later in the summer. But right now, it's just subscription only. So if people want to get the best seats possible, I recommend a subscription, and you get some extra benefits like a cheaper cost for each concert and priority access to any other concerts we may announce in the future.
Let's talk about another favorite, Jazz Upstairs. Of course, you did Jazz on Stage a couple weeks back, but the intention is to move it back to upstairs. Is that right?
So we're still working on the details with that. We are... Just for your listeners, we typically have had once a month jazz cabaret performances in the Rodale Room at Miller Symphony Hall on the third floor, which is a great space for such a presentation. During the pandemic, we brought jazz performances to our main hall. Our main hall was much more suitable for recording, so we had on the main stage a number of jazz performances, including the one you just referenced. And we'll be debuting another one online in June. We think we're going to keep jazz down here for a few months at least. We're working right now to do some things in July and August since restrictions have been lifted. and will probably stay in the theater for those, including a couple jazz performances. But I do think, yes, a return to the Rodale Room is going to be the ideal scenario, particularly when we want to reintroduce food and beverage in particular to audiences at our hall. So eventually we will probably get back up to the Rodale Room and have jazz upstairs performances.
At Miller, you have become pretty good at recording and broadcasting your shows. Is there any intention to keep both sides of that going, maybe a live performance coupled with the opportunity to stream also?
So we are working on what our virtual offerings are for the future. There's a lot of conversations right now happening, particularly amongst orchestras, how much to keep streaming and how much not to. At our core, we are a live performance organization. So most definitely, we are looking forward to getting back to welcoming people back to Miller Symphony Hall, hopefully this starting this summer and then for the orchestra in the fall. And that will be our main focus. We are a small organization with limited resources, so we need to be focusing as much attention on the marketing and publicity and customer service with welcoming people back to the hall. With that said, we have learned a number of things since the pandemic hit and since we started streaming. I mean, we've done numerous streams. If you include both the orchestra and the jazz, I believe it's about 16 or 17 streams we've self-produced.
And they're good.
Oh, thank you. They've really been received very well by the community. So we've learned some things. We've also purchased some equipment. And thus, I see some opportunities, perhaps on a limited basis, to do streaming in the future. And we're discussing what that may look like. We're also, you may recall, we have a partnership with Service Electric, which has recorded a number of our orchestra concerts for delayed broadcast on their channel. And so we're in discussions about them returning. So we'll see where it goes. But one thing I can say that we are definitely looking to work on is, at least for our marketing, we have much more opportunity understanding now about what we can record for promotional purposes. And so I think there's going to be also just a lot more recording, not necessarily always to broadcast a feature-length presentation, but can be used to help with the branding of the organization on the web and help boost our promotional endeavors as well. So we'll see. I can't commit to anything at this moment, but there are possibilities.
We've been chatting with Al Jacobson, the executive director of Miller Symphony Hall. Al, thank you very much. We'll see you at the show. You are listening to WDIY, and we will be back after these messages.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
WDIY is proud to offer programming support to the Southside Film Festival, presenting its 17th festival, June 15th through the 19th. The festival continues to bring independent films from around the world to your backyard. Films will be screening at the National Museum of Industrial History, Touchstone Theater, and the Lehigh Valley Charter High School for the Arts. For more information, ssff.org or on their Facebook page, facebook.com/Southside Film Fest.
Welcome back to On Every Main Street. Our next guest is Charlene Donchez-Mowers, the president of Historic Bethlehem Museums and Sites. Welcome, Charlene.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you today, Greg.
Well, terrific. First of all, Charlene, thanks to you and your crew for keeping Bethlehem as available to tourism as it could be this past year. Hopefully all of your outreach is going to pay off in the coming months.
Oh, absolutely. We were so concerned that we wanted to make sure that we had things available for the public to do, even though they could not go into our buildings or see our historic sites inside. We tried to do what we could to have timed tours, walking tours available, and things available out at Burnside Plantation, our 6.5-acre farm here in the city of Bethlehem, or in the Colonial Industrial Quarter for outside events and activities on a small scale, very carefully. And now we're hoping to continue this year with more activities, both inside and outside.
Well, thank you. It was really important to us locals because it kind of kept our head on straight during the Christmas season. It was nice to see the Christmas city appear as we're pretty much used to seeing it. One quick question, because we have a lot of people who listen from outside of our area and travel to Bethlehem. How did we become the Christmas city? How did that happen? Who christened it Bethlehem the Christmas
well,
City?
Well, actually, this is not Hollywood. This is for real. It was on Christmas Eve, 1741, when Count Zinzendorf, the head of the group of Moravians, members of a Protestant denomination called the Moravian Church, were in a stable here in Bethlehem, and they were singing a hymn with a line that was, "Not Jerusalem, lowly Bethlehem." And that, according to the story, is how Bethlehem was officially named on Christmas Eve, 1741, in a stable. How appropriate is that?
So if you're listening anywhere outside of our area, if that's not enough reason to come visit us here at the Christmas City, then what is?
Please join us any time of the year, not just at Christmas.
That's
there are
right.
always wonderful things to see and do.
And because of all of our Moravian history, you're now working with a team to make Bethlehem a World Heritage Site. Can you please explain the importance of this designation?
Oh my goodness, this is so exciting. We have been working for quite a few years to get to this point. First of all, we're able to secure a National Historic Landmark District for 14.7 acres in the heart of our city, which was the original settlement of Moravian Bethlehem. It's called Historic Moravian Bethlehem. And from there, a National Historic Landmark or a National Historic Landmark District can petition to be on the World Heritage List. And there are just over 1,100 sites around the world on the World Heritage List. So we are working in conjunction with Herrenhut in Germany and Grace Hill in Northern Ireland to be on the World Heritage List, along with Christiansfeld in Denmark, which is already on. And all four of our sites are historic Moravian church settlements that were all founded in the 1700s. So we are doing something called a serial nomination. We're one of a series across borders, across countries, and across the ocean. It's very, very exciting. There are only 24 sites, World Heritage Sites in the United States.
Wow. It's important to point out that other World Heritage Sites are things like the Great Wall of China, the pyramids, the Acropolis, and
the Grand Canyon in the United States, or Independence Hall, the Statue of Liberty. So we would actually form a heritage triangle with the Statue of Liberty in New York and Independence Hall in Philadelphia, right here in this area, which would be amazing.
So do people take World Heritage Site tours? For example, might somebody from Europe who is listening to us, and we have a lot of listeners in Europe, might they start in Philadelphia and then think about taking the easy swing out to Bethlehem and then on to New York?
Exactly. Absolutely. It would be a very easy trip to see three World Heritage Sites within, oh, good heavens, 90 miles from New York and 50 miles from Philadelphia. So in that small area, that would be an amazing trip. It would be wonderful for the community to be able to have increased tourism, increased tax dollars, increased hotel stays, restaurants. Would be very, very positive. And it brings an incredible sense of pride of place for the historic preservation efforts, and not just for Bethlehem, but for the larger region.
So once again, we know what we have here. We're encouraging you to come and visit us, because like I said, we have a lot of people who listen via the internet to our radio station. So consider us. It's like an hour and 10 minutes to drive from either Philly or New York. It's very, very convenient. And you will be really surprised at what you see when you get to historic Bethlehem. How long does it take to get an application like this even considered?
Oh my goodness. I have been working on this for over 15 years. It takes a long time. There are a lot of steps involved.
And how about funding for something like this? You need some help, obviously. This something that just pops up.
We have funding from individual donors. We have funding from the city of Bethlehem, and we have funding from Northampton County. So we have been very fortunate in having funding from those areas. And this is a group of multiple property owners. Where in most of the World Heritage sites in the United States are government-owned, but we are a combination. A small part is owned by the City of Bethlehem, part is owned by Moravian College, Bethlehem Maryam Ravian, Central Moravian Church, and Historic Bethlehem Museums and Sites. We all have a role in this, so it's very, very exciting. The oldest building is from 1741, and the newest building is from 1806. So it's a very narrow time frame, but we have a high degree of authenticity and integrity in our structures and in the story that we tell. And some of the buildings are actually open for people to see.
Is there any one building that people say, wow, that's something that just they can't believe? Is there one special? I know the whole area is special, but is there one that people see that's really gets their attention?
Well, I think there are several. One is the 1741 Gemeinhaus, which is the oldest building in Bethlehem. It is believed to be the largest 18th century log structure that has been in continuous use since it was built. It was never empty. It was actually lived in until 1966 when it became a museum. And another one is the Waterworks, 1762 Waterworks. That's America's first pump municipal water system. And we still have the wheel, the 16-foot diameter water wheel in that building. And people also enjoy the blacksmith shop, watching the blacksmiths at work. We have live demonstrators.
Is there anything that the people in the Lehigh Valley can do to help with this effort?
Yes, become members of Historic Bethlehem, contribute to this effort, come visit us.
So if you go on the website, what is the website?
Historicbethlehem.org.
There's a lot of information on that website, and please become a member because you will help this effort. Let's talk about what's coming up the rest of the year as we open up.
Oh my goodness. Blueberry Festival is back. Last year it was very small. This year it's back to the regular Blueberry Festival, and we will have on-site activities on July 17 and 18 at Burnside Plantation, our 6.5-acre farm here in Bethlehem. And then we will have drive-through pickup for all your favorite blueberry treats July 19th through 21st.
Ooh, that
sounds
tasty. And
then all summer, we have a wonderful new exhibit at the Kemmerer Museum of Decorative Arts called Art at Home. And we will be opening the Moravian Museum in the latter half of this month, toward the end of June. And that will have a Moravian Legacy exhibit, a new exhibit that's opening. And weekends, we continue to give walking tours on both the north side and the south side. We do tours of the Hoover Mason Trestle, the Rise and Fall of Bethlehem Steel Tour. So if you check our website, you will be able to see the times of the tour offerings.
And then, of course, we have some of the standbys, the things that we know about that are coming back. We have Music Fest back in August.
You'd have to go on the ArtsQuest website to check out Music Fest, and that's coming up, I believe, the second week of August.
What other things are coming up in the fall that you're excited about?
Well, I know that Celtic will be coming back. That's the last weekend in September.
Oh, we love
and,
that.
And people can go on the Celtic Cultural Alliance website. We will be having Apple Days Festival out at Burnside Plantation in the fall, which is people really enjoy coming to Burnside on September 18th to 19th on the weekend. And then once again, we'll have a drive-through pickup from the 20th to the 22nd for all things Apple-related. Our two festivals, the Blueberry Festival and Apple Days, are both related, as you can tell, to fruits.
Sure.
That are seasonal. And lots of activities for families. And for individuals, I just enjoy having a chance to be outside and see our farm. And then we always have our run, our Turkey Trot 5K walk run, which is the Saturday after Thanksgiving this year. That will be on November 27th. Then Christmas season, obviously, we'll have all sorts of things related to Christmas, as we always do.
When you sit back and look at this at the end of the day, what are you most mm-hmm. proud of?
At Historic Bethlehem?
Yes.
I'm just so excited that the community continues to support us and that we continue to receive visitors from literally all over the world. Pre-pandemic, we had visitors from almost every state, something like 48 of the 50 states, and 25 or 26 different foreign countries. So we're just delighted with the support, the membership, the donors, the sponsors, the volunteers that come out on a regular basis to help us preserve 20 historic sites on about 20 acres of land here in Bethlehem, which is huge for a small institution such as ours. In addition to the Moravian sites, we also, the Kemmerer Museum of Decorative Arts is the only museum dedicated to the decorative arts in Pennsylvania. So we're very happy to share that with the community and with our visitors.
Charlene, if we want to learn more about Historic Bethlehem, what's the phone number?
The phone number is real simple. It's 1-800-360-TOUR. 1-800-360-TOUR.
Charlene Donchez-Mowers, thank you very much for all the information today. And we thank you for being our guest on Every Main Street.
Up next on WDIY 88.1 FM, news headlines from NPR, followed by our Monday night folk program, Folk Classics.